Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network in association with Mueller, She Wrote Media. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C., and today my very special guest is loudmouth Julie Lynn. Now, I call her a loudmouth because she told me to. Also, I'm a loudmouth, so we're both loudmouths. She's interesting because I went to school with her. I went to high school with her, and we never knew each other. But we're friends now on Facebook, and it's a funny story to tell. I love her politics. I love her humor. So before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, supported by listeners, and it's woman-run. A great big thank you to everybody who supports the show. If you enjoy today's podcast, visit patreon.com/startmeup. Check out all the tiers. I do include a tier with a much shorter intro and no ads. You can hear the free shows on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they're followed up by What's Up, a show just for patrons where I talk about anything that comes to mind. It's a little more personal, kind of like my online diary. Visit patreon.com/startmeup. And don't forget, you can find Start Me Up on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are found. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Julie Lynn. Welcome to the show, loudmouth Julie.
Thank you. And it's nice to know my reputation precedes me.
Well, you're just so funny because I know you told me to call you a loudmouth. So, but I'm a loudmouth. And I actually always say I'm a big mouth. So,
Well, you know, it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. You know,
totally.
We're all here, we're making noise, and that's what counts.
All right, so I teased everybody in the intro. I got to explain. You and I went to the same high school, but
yes.
We didn't know each other. And
no.
I met you through a mutual friend. It's funny because Leanne, who is our mutual friend, I mm-hmm. knew of her, but I didn't hang out with her. And
I didn't either, actually. I know we had classes together and stuff, and we may have been acquaintances, but, you know, we weren't buddies who hung out. And one of my few regrets about high school is, you know, that I didn't know people like you and Leanne back then.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I'll explain some of my story. I knew of Leanne, and I remember always thinking she was so pretty. I just thought she's so freaking pretty. Oh my God, she's so pretty. And she's just so sweet. And it's funny because again, like, yeah, I didn't know her. And on Facebook, I don't remember when I became friends with her, but it was probably early on, maybe 2010 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, what a lovely person. I've just grown to love her. And I mean, love in the way, like, I love humans. I love her. I think she's a good, decent human. And
I totally agree.
Yeah, I just wish I knew her.
The sweetest, the kindest, the
yes.
nicest. And I hope we get to meet in person again someday, because I would love to hang
That
out
would be
with her.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the crazy part. So, like, Leanne suggests that you and I be friends. So I become friends with you. And, like, oh, yeah, Julie's fucking hilarious. You're totally funny. And you've got this whacked out sense of humor that I absolutely love. And then I'm friends with this other guy named Fred, who I met Fred in Hollywood. I used to work at the Glendale Broadway. And I met this woman named Mary. And Mary and I became really good friends. And Mary married Fred. And you know Fred. And it's like... Oh, my God.
You know, it's just like small circles everywhere, and they all end up connected.
And then you were on Mueller, She Wrote.
Yes, a few years ago.
Okay, so I need to hear a little bit about how that happened.
I got to be friends with Allison on Facebook and just loved her show from the get-go. And I had occasion to be in San Diego one time for a work event. And she asked if I would want to be on. And I said, are you kidding? Of course, just like I did for you. And it was a great time and really fun experience. And I've been longing for something similar ever since.
Yay.
And here we are.
And here we are. And it's so funny because today just happens to be our prom anniversary.
Oh, isn't that just precious?
So you didn't go.
No, I didn't. So this is just an anniversary of another day of me sitting at home.
Well, I couldn't get anyone to go. Oh God, there was a guy. I wish I could remember his last name, but it was this guy named Kelly, and he had brown curly hair. Do you remember
Kelly
him?
Wand?
Probably. And yes. He was not my type at all, and I couldn't find anybody to go to prom with. I got the dress. Once I got the dress, I'm like, I'm fucking going because I gotta wear this fucking dress.
You gotta show this thing off.
Yeah, and so. I don't know. Kelly was complaining that he couldn't get a date. And I was like, oh, that's great. Then we can go together. And I didn't give a shit. I didn't like him. But and then all of a sudden he remembered he had a date. I'm like, oh, no, you didn't.
How
really?
How did you forget you have a date?
He just didn't want to go with me. He didn't want to go with me. Because I think that I was like, and that's what I want to ask you this question in a minute. It's going to be to see what. Well, I won't say anything. But he didn't like me. And it's like I looked like I was 26 years old. And I remember it was
you were the most beautiful thing.
But you know, but in high school, I looked like a woman and I scared the shit. Do you remember Larry Stone?
I don't think so.
Well, he called me Big Mama. And he was always calling me names. And then later I found out that he liked me. So it was like,
well, of course,
that
because
typical...
why else do they abuse you exactly. Except when they like you?
So my high school experience at the school that we went to, it was funny because I had gone to West High in 10th grade. Mm-hmm. And that was like this crazy ass popularity contest. Everybody had a costume. Everybody, I never saw anything like this in my life. I've never been to a school that was so, it was all about popularity. It was all about the clothes you wore, the haircut you had, and all of. And it was worse than any other school. My best friend at the time happened to be in with that crowd, so I was on the periphery. I was never one of the popular people, but I got to hang with the popular people.
Okay.
And as a result, I didn't give a shit about school, and I just partied and had fun and failed three classes. So,
I went about it all wrong. I was way too serious.
No, because you're smart, and I'm sure you went to college and got your degree and did, you know, which I did go to college, but I then went to acting school. So
I got there
that's
eventually.
A whole
new... It took a really long time, but you know, I powered through it, and you know, now I do absolutely nothing to do with what I got my degree in.
And that's usually how it goes. And so when I started South High, I was coming, I was punished. And my mother was like, okay, you can't basically leave the house until the next report card and you've got to get A's and B's. So that's pretty much what happened. And then I just realized how stupid it was to give a shit about popularity. And when I was at South High, I met this group of girls. It was Joni and Lori and Rita. And we pretty much didn't hang out at school. We either hung out at my apartment, which was the apartment, the Willow Tree apartments that were really literally right
those.
Next
to right down the road from school.
Yes. And so we would go there. Or at lunch, we'd go to the beach and we would hang out with, you know, construction workers. And I didn't hang out with school people anymore. So I didn't give a shit about being popular. So I just didn't care. And I always wondered, because here I was 6 foot tall and I looked like I was 26 years old. And as I said, I didn't do so well in my 10th grade. And so when I started, math was always terrible. And I just fucking never paid attention. I always struggled with math, except when I was punished. Then I got good grades because, of course, I buckled down and I did what I was supposed to do. But I remember I think I was in my high school year and I started in a lower class. I can't remember if it was a 9th or 10th grade class. So humiliating. And they literally thought I was the teacher. And I was just like,
oh, my God.
It was so humiliating. So
that's hilarious.
My question to you, and I really honestly, in fact, I'm kind of hoping for negativity, but I'm
oh, I got tons of that, don't you worry.
Well, just about me, because it's like I don't know what my classmates thought of me, and I can only imagine, because when I went to South High, I looked like a woman, and some days I kind of dressed
you
punk
look like
rock.
A pump, feel like a sneaker, you know.
Exactly. But some days, like in the 11th grade, I would look like I was a punk rocker, kind of like a quasi punk rocker. And then that would be like on Tuesday. But on Fridays, I was always putting my beachy outfit on. And then occasionally I'd wear my mom's work clothes. And so it's like...
Just to emphasize the whole, math teacher persona.
Yes. So as somebody who just, you know, you were aware of me, even though you didn't know me.
Yeah.
What did you think of me? I'm so curious.
Oh, gosh. I felt kind of on the periphery of everyone. Mm-hmm. I really felt like the freak who didn't fit in anywhere. So it seemed like everyone to me was, you know, in their own little circle, mm-hmm. or just in some rarefied existence that I could never even get near. So I felt like the alien most
right.
of the time. So, I don't know. I mean, there's a whole group of, especially the girls, you know, mm-hmm. that had their cliques and whatnot.
Yes.
That I just felt like partially observing from the outside, like mm-hmm. some kind of freakish scientist, partially envious because of the ease with which they seem to get along together
wow,
and just do stuff and whatnot. But yeah, other than thinking that you were like model beautiful, I don't remember thinking I'm nothing negative at all.
And which actually kind of surprises me. And the reason I'll say that, and I know you weren't in these clicky groups, but I don't know if you remember, there was this one crazy night, and I swear to God, I'll shut up after this, but I just have to share because I want to get your opinion on stuff.
Yeah.
But there was a pajama dance, and my girlfriend and I went. But we wore like sexy lingerie instead of wearing cutesy pajamas. And
how could they not know that somebody would do that? I mean, you're just asking for it. Yeah. Oh, I sleep on the nude. Okay. I guess I'm dressed.
And we were. Oh my God. So I went with Lori. I don't know if you remember Lori, but she was my best friend at the time, and so we went and. I think this was the same night. And we were there and we were getting everybody was giving us dirty looks and they were calling us sluts and everything. And we were just laughing. We just thought it was funny and we thought we weren't slutty enough. And somehow we wound up.
No one's ever slutty.
Never slutty enough. We wound up in this woman. Her name is Teresa and I don't remember her last name either. And her brat. She had a brat. That car. Remember those weird cars? So it was Teresa and some other girl. And me and Lori, and then we had these guys with us. I don't know how the guys factored in. We went to a liquor store, and here, you know, Lori and I are dressed up like sluts in our lingerie.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the guys go into the liquor store, and we're in the brat, and I was in the back of the brat. And the guys come running out of the liquor store, and they're like, go! They get in the car,
oh my God.
And the fucking guy from the liquor store has a gun, and he's shooting at us. And
what the fuck?
I guess what happened, and this is in fucking Torrance. So I guess what happened was there were some other people, some other guys in the store when our guys went in who were robbing it, and they're like, oh, that's a good idea. We're going to rob it too. So that's what we're, and I, like, we were literally like ducking bullets in the back of this brat.
Oh my God.
My childhood was weird.
The place that's already being robbed. I mean,
I know. Oh my God! So okay, I'll shut up with my stories now. But I just had to share because
I never want you to shut up with your stories. These are fantastic. I don't have anything like this to offer.
Well, you know, I went to my whole life. I moved around a lot. I lived in Torrance for a total of 4 years. I thought fucking Torrance. At that time in my life, coming from Hollywood, where literally down the street was the 7-Eleven where all the hookers and the Johns hung out and would like hit on me and my girlfriend who were 14.
Yeah, seemed like 26.
Yeah, looking 26, but I was only 14. But Torrance was just this oasis. It was a beach town and it was safe and there was no graffiti and it seemed like, you know, all the parties and the kids and the fashions at that time. It was like the mid 80s. And so I was only there for 4 years. I talked to Amanda Wiss, who's an actress, and I think she either grew up in Redondo or Hermosa, I don't remember, but she described it as like living in a Beach Boys song. And so I thought, God, that was fucking perfect. But now, did you grow up there?
Yes, I was born there. My parents lived there, and I stayed there until, gosh, about 16 years ago.
Wow.
I lived in Long Beach for a year, and I lived in Rancho Palos Verdes for a year. Mm-hmm. But other than that, all my time was spent in Torrance. And It's funny, my first husband and I actually bought a house that was the same floor plan as the one I grew up in the same development.
Wow.
So, that was that for a while until I finally escaped, and then it's like, God, I'm so glad to be out of there.
I know.
I was never a beach person is the thing. And, you know, if you're a beach person, Torrance is fantastic.
Right.
But if you're not, if you're like, you know, the sullen, gothy type or, mod wannabe or whatever there wasn't really a whole lot for you.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I definitely, you know, I walked in there already kind of like, I had my height. I can't say, it was funny because when I started West High, I was 10th grade, so I was 15, and I was wearing glasses at that time, and I had I have terrible vision, so my glasses were Coke bottle thick, so thick. And the day I got my lenses off, this boy who looked like a man, you know how there's in high school, there's the man boys that they have the facial hair and all that.
There's the ones who look like they're 30, and then there's the other ones who look like they're 8.
Yeah.
And at some point, there's like no middle ground, and you gotta decide: do you want the boy men or the he men?
Yeah, and Bruce was a 30-year-old looking he man, and fucking he hit on. And I remember seeing him. See, I'm telling a story. I remember seeing him around campus with this pretty girl, and I imagined they were together, but he saw me. I wasn't wearing my glasses. He calls me over, and he's like, hey, can I have your phone number? And I'm just so thrilled because it's like no boy fucking ever asked me out before. And I was so excited. And so he called me, and he basically asked me to be his affair on the side.
Wow. So he was acting like the 30-year-old guy, too.
Yes. That's not the first guy who wanted me to be the affair on the side. But yeah, by the time I went to South, though, I had kind of grown into myself. And, you know, like I had the confidence. And I just happened to find the crowd of girls that had my same interests. And I definitely had fun. So I can imagine. But when I first went there, I didn't know anyone, and I felt so alone. And I remember feeling so sad, and I was crying a lot because I didn't have any friends. And, you know, Lori was the one who reached out to me and asked me, you know, hey, do you want to come to a party? And that was the end of it.
Yeah,
and
well, that's good.
Debauchery after that. Oh, my God. But those were fun times. And I just want to say growing up in that town was fun. And I was so disappointed when we left. But when we left, we went to Hollywood. And then I found like a new...
That would have been my dream at that age.
I loved it. I loved living in Hollywood. That was really fun. So,
I'm sure.
I had some crazy times. So now you're living in Northern California, right?
Yes.
Do you prefer it?
Yes, big time.
And
I do come down to L.A. A couple times a month. My boyfriend lives down there in Echo Park, and so I do spend a lot of time down there now. Actually, a lot more than I have since before he came along.
Right.
Before then, it was like, oh God, I have to go down and take my annual Christmas trip to visit my parents. And, aside from that, I didn't really want to go down there at all. But having a reason to go down makes all the difference in the world.
Oh yeah, it definitely does.
I do love Northern California. It's really wonderful up here, you know, despite all the Trumpers and all those assholes.
Right. Yeah. Now, and this is a long shot, but do you know Jeff Pryor?
Oh God, I remember the name.
The reason Fred might know him, but I believe he lives in Echo Park, and I'm not asking you that because he lives in Echo Park, mainly because, like, you know, the whole, oh, I know someone who lives in Echo Park. Do you know Gene? And it's like, I don't know.
Well, but you'd be surprised how many people know each other there. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Really.
But Jeff he knew Fred, and he used to work in fragrance, which was how I got to know Fred, and perfume, I mean. And now Jeff, he lives in Echo Park, and he runs it's called The Real Bark, and he rescues dogs. And he's
amazing.
Wonderful. He's just wonderful guy. I imagine if you met him now, you guys would be fast friends, because I think you guys would just get along.
That's great. No.
I don't know if you'll ever. One of these days. But, so let's, why don't we switch over into politics now, because I definitely want to get your opinion on this. And I want to know, now, did you follow everything Steve Schmidt said?
I have been keeping up on it recently because he's been in just such a whirlwind tirade of no fuck giving.
Oh,
how can
my
he
God.
Not? I mean, you know, like I said to you before, he's just burning everything down, and I've got my Jiffy Pop ready to eat over it.
Well, I blocked him today for the second time because I did talk a little shit about him, and I figure I've done it to him before. I called him out because he, the other day, basically was blaming RBG for what's happening. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh my God, really? You're going to fucking blame the dead woman when you had something to do with Alito getting his seat? Shut the fuck up. So I blocked him, but then I unblocked him because he went nuts. And I had to talk some shit about him today, and I blocked him because I figure I would prefer that he not go on one of his long threads.
He was going nuts yesterday, just calling people out left and right.
Mm-hmm.
People who deserved it, in my opinion, probably. But you don't need to put yourself in the line of fire for that kind of shit.
No. And, you know, I mean, he was going off about Meghan McCain, and I think, you know, obviously that's what she called him, a pedo.
Yeah.
And he didn't like that, which, okay, I don't blame him. I don't blame him for being pissed off. But what he wound up doing is telling everybody. Now, when did it start? I don't know what night it was. But my girlfriend is sending me his text and going, holy shit, Steve Schmidt's breaking down. Steve Schmidt's breaking down. And so, you know, I'm just like watching it and I'm like, oh, my God. But then he put it all in a Substack. And when it was in the Substack, it was very clear. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to go over the gist here. So Meghan pisses him off because she's insufferable, and we all know that. And, okay, first of all, he talks about how John McCain spent his 70th birthday on a yacht with the Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska. Mm-hmm. And the reason he did that had something to do with an affair that he had with some lobbyist who was 41 when he was 70. And everybody was keeping that quiet for him. And so, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but Manafort and it was Rick Davis, I believe, and I think they were with the same, I don't know if it's company, whatever, as Roger Stone was. Manafort? God, I can't remember the name. Manafort, Black, and Stone, or something like that. I think maybe Rick Davis had
something creative like that, right?
Yes. So there was the side of the campaign that was according to Steve for Democracy, and then there was the like Manafort side, and those were the guys who picked Palin. And so Steve Schmidt was asked by John McCain to sit in the room with him when he was going to talk to Palin, and Schmidt's like, no, this is your first act as president, and even though he wasn't yet president, but you know, you're the one who has to make this decision. So now he regrets that and said this was the biggest mistake of his life because McCain sat with her alone and came out and said, fuck it, let's roll the dice. And I'm looking here. So anyway, he had this affair, and because he had this affair, they were hiding it for him, and somehow it ties into Paul Manafort and whatnot. And the thing is that right now McCain has some foundation, and sitting on the board are these fucking Russian people. So he is telling us now that he knew that this was in our government and that McCain was part of it. And because he's pissed off at the insufferable Veruca Salt daughter, he's now going.
That's what finally drives him to let this loose.
Yes. And pat on the back for Steve, because now he's telling the truth and everyone should just love him for it.
Yeah, exactly. Bullshit.
Oh, my God. He is a fucking nutbag. And he is going, you know, he went crazy on Sherry Jacobus. I'm going to say nothing about Sherry Jacobus right now, because she and I we agree in some places and we disagree in other places. I don't want to fight with the woman. I helped her with her. She had cancer and she had to GoFundMe, which he's calling a grift. I don't even want to talk about that because I feel like, you know, I understand she has cancer. I was on the phone with her. I don't even want to go there. I don't want to get involved with their fights with each other, but I think it's all ridiculous. And I think that I hope that enough people who were like giving money to Lincoln Project will recognize now that, hey, we can be happy that these people who there was a fucking article, scientific study done on the brains of liberals and conservatives, and they are different. And
wait,
so,
wait, they found one for conservatives?
They had to have a microscope, but they found it.
An electron microscope.
Exactly. But there are brains are wired differently. And so here, these conservative people who are never Trumpers have a different perception and see things differently than liberals do. And so now when they're going after Trumpers, liberals are all like, woohoo, we love what you're saying about Trump. We love that you're going after McConnell. But then I think they miss, you know, these people are what got us. I'm glad that they're there, but don't give them money. Don't fucking support
them. I mean, we need all of it for people on our side. And if they're opposing Trump and whatever kind of transformation they're going through, good on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you should save the dollars and the time devoted to helping causes and whatnot for liberal candidates and organizations.
Yeah, because there's just, I mean, we have to be smart about this. And, you know, people, I know everybody likes to be in their little clique of who they follow, and I'm not, I have mine, you know, I have the people who I love and I follow and I think they're smart and funny, and occasionally I learn that some of these people aren't who I thought they were, and and when I learn that, I don't double down on my bullshit respect for them because I'm embarrassed. I just realize, oh, they fooled me, you know.
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
fooled. And I don't think it's wrong to admit.
There's always going to be the possibility of that because, you know, humans are complex. Mm-hmm. We have multiple sides, and not everyone is going to jive with everyone at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to make that call for your own self and sense of ethics, you know, what you can pour into what you can't, given new information.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I liked Steve Schmidt. I understood who he was, and I understood that he was with a party that helped pave the way. I mean, Palin, hello. He also, you know, I mean, the fact that he's taking no responsibility for her at this point in the game, okay, fine. But still, you paved the way for what we're in and dealing with right now, specifically since you helped Alito get his seat. So I saw his true colors when I invited him on my show because, to my surprise, he said yes. And he had seen my pinned tweet, which was at the time during the Trump administration, and it was about the fact that I lived in Russia when I was 12, and I couldn't believe that Vladimir was so close to ruining our democracy. And so he asked me about that because before he came on my show, we had a phone call, and he was super fucking nice. And you know what's funny? When he talks, he likes to he talks with his mid-Atlantic accent, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Okay, Clinton. And when he talked to me on the phone, I almost thought, is this Steve Schmidt? Because it didn't sound like that.
Completely different.
I mean, it was like he enunciates for the TV. He really, truly does. And I mean, he's got the mid-Atlantic accent. But it's like he turns it up when he goes on TV. So, or at least when he goes on podcasts. So, but we were talking and he was really nice and he was asking me about Russia. So then, okay, we book a date. He's going to be on my show in a month. So in the interim, he talks some shit about Elizabeth Warren. Excuse me. And so I called him out and I said, you're giving the GOP, this was during the primary, and I said, you're giving the GOP talking points. So he says, well, respectfully, you know, they would do that anyway. And I said, well, you don't have to fucking help them. So I don't think that he liked that I said that. And he comes on my show, and unlike every other show that he's on, he's basically on my show, blame the Democrats for everything. Usually he's blaming Trump, but it was so.
Yeah. When you see him on MSNBC or whatever. He's
going after
like
the Democrats,
the
Republicans.
Right.
Yeah. And then he didn't like what I said. So he changed his tune. And that was my first clue. Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. And then, of course, that Lincoln Project article came out, basically exposing them and talking about how, you know, he was running around screaming about generational wealth. And he, you know, but we also all know that in the midst of all of this, he goes off with fucking Starbucks Howard Schultz, who is a complete asshole libertarian and basically takes votes away from both. He would take votes away from both parties, and that's not, he's never going to win. He's just going to siphon off votes.
Yeah, he's just going to erode the support that our candidates could have.
Yeah, and it was somebody threw some money at Steve Schmidt, and that was where his loyalty was. And that's where I believe it is now. And for anybody listening who's like so in love with these Never Trumpers going after, you can be in love with that. I don't have a problem. Again, it's always about just don't fucking give them money. They don't need your money.
Yeah, your dollars are finite. Put them in the places where they're going to do the most good in the bigger picture.
Yeah, and by all means, share their tweets, whatever. But, you know, let's not forget that Rick Wilson went after Max Cleland, who lost both legs and an arm in Vietnam and basically called him a traitor. And and because of it, he lost his campaign. Rick Wilson is still the exact same man he was then. He's just, he recognizes that Trump was really bad for his business. So I guess he could have stayed a Republican and, you know, continued on to make his money and just gone along the way of the oligarchs. And I'm glad that he didn't do it. But I don't think any of them deserve our money. And I, you know, I was so reluctant to embrace them. And I always looked at them like, okay, I'm going to accept what you're saying and I'm going to accept your help. But let's see what happens after the election. And I think they're all starting to, I mean, fucking George Conway just tweeted out that Roe was one of the worst decisions for the rule of law.
Oh my God, I saw that tweet and I was just, okay. Yeah. You know, I had admired some of the things he'd said along the way, but for God's sake, they always revert to type.
And it goes back to conservatives and liberals have different ways of seeing things. Their brains work differently. And, you know, take it the way you want, but we, you know, we have more empathy. Our, you know, liberals just have more empathy and we think differently.
Yep.
So, all right. You know what? We're going to have to take a quick break, but we will be back after this message. Oh, hi. It's Kimberly. Are you my patron? Why aren't you my patron? If you just go to patreon.com/startmeup, you're going to see all the tiers I offer. You're going to see so much. You're going to see everything. Just go to patreon.com/startmeup and become my patron today. You won't regret it. Okay, we're back. So let's see. Birth control and Roe v. Wade and gay marriage. Okay.
And
so,
other things that aren't here anymore. Soon to be said.
Yes, exactly. So let me ask you this. Last Monday night, the news came down that they were going to strike down Roe v. Wade. What was your reaction?
There was a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling of expletives, shaking of heads, gnashing of teeth, renting of garments, just all around fucking pissed off.
Yeah. Did you
think it was going
right
there? Yeah. But I guess, you know, you always think, oh, it's going to be a little bit down the road, and it's not going to be quite as blatant. And just really kind of, this is what we're doing, and we're basing it on some really bizarre interpretations of things, and I don't know. It was extremely depressing, maddening, but hopefully galvanizing in the long run.
Yeah, that's exactly how I'm seeing it, because I Molly Jung Fast has been saying, you know, they're going to strike down Roe. They're going to strike down Roe. And then I've been hearing people say, no, they're not going to strike down Roe because they needed to fundraise. And I'm just like, I didn't think they would do it. I thought that they would just gut it, which and the thing is I can't officially say I want them to strike down Roe because I don't mean it. But of the two, of gutting it with the same result, I want them to strike it down because that's like you said, it's going to galvanize. It's going to slap a whole bunch of people across the face who were asleep. And they're going to go, oh, and I hope it's enough. And that's my next question is now, I mean, we've been fighting white supremacy and you look at the poll numbers and of course the historic, you know, the party that's at the top, you know, their Congress usually goes the opposite way, blah, blah, blah. Forget history right now. And, okay, if we just looked at the polls and we just listened to some of these talking heads who I didn't necessarily believe, not that they were liars, but I just wasn't buying into the Dems were going to lose. But I don't know that the Democrats were as enthusiastic about voting out white supremacy. I don't, you know, like there's all these people in the country who don't vote. And are they even aware? Do they even understand what's going on? Now, with Roe, I think there is an opportunity for for a lot of these people, especially young women who were not paying attention, all of a sudden they're going to start paying attention. And I would even go so far as to say, like, for instance, in Mississippi and Texas, where the majority of abortion clinics have been, just closed or whatever because of trap laws. Mm-hmm. So where they had 40, now they have one or they have none. Yeah. I wonder if in those red states where abortion is already almost impossible to get, I wonder if striking it down will mean the difference that some of those girls and young women who live in those areas will now understand. Mm-hmm. Like, did they know? Did they know there's, because, you know, they're just going along and they're not getting pregnant and they don't have to worry about it. Maybe they have a friend or something. But I mean, do they know that they don't have the option anymore? I don't know, because the Republicans have been so stealth and quiet.
Yeah. It's kind of puzzling.
Yeah.
Just to opine about those things. You know, I hope this was the wake-up call we needed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we have so much trouble staying focused on these issues that it's like you see the slow-moving avalanche coming towards you, and we keep saying, yep, there's an avalanche coming.
Yeah.
And nobody's actually taking any real steps to address the oncoming avalanche. And then it gets there, and we're like, oh, there was just an avalanche. Now we have to react.
Yeah, now we have to march.
Yeah, exactly. Why weren't we doing that before? I mean, we've always been kind of on the offensive with the Republican Party. I mean, you know, you got to hand it to them. That is their thing.
They
stay as a voting bloc. They stay focused. They stay on the offensive, and we're constantly running defense.
When you were young, and let's just take you into your early 20s, did you feel like, after you had witnessed everything, you know, the whole 70s, burn your bra, women are equal, did you just feel like we were going to continue to progress and that by now we would have seen women leading the country? Was that your assumption?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I was fortunate because Torrance is not the most liberal, progressive area, despite it being a beach city and whatnot. But I was very fortunate in that my mother, who was a single mom by the time I was three.
Me too.
And had to put herself through college and support herself and all this stuff. She was always a Democrat, always liberal, and really instilled those values into me, despite, you know, all my grandparents being Republicans and whatnot. So she and my aunt especially were really influential on me in those kind of things. And I think I was able to see that from a very young age. And so I adopted those principles and that outlook on life very young. And I feel so fortunate for that.
Wow.
Because seeing my mother, you know, have to be the breadwinner, have to be the caregiver, have to do all these things. She's such a strong person. It really affected the way I see these things. And when I was starting out in life in my late teens, early 20s, I didn't think that we were going to be taking backward steps like this. You know, I mean, it seemed like things, you know, were maybe difficultly progressing, but progressing slowly over time, at least incrementally.
Yeah. And I mean, at that time, I was not a political person. I didn't really start getting involved in politics until like the 2000 election is really what grabbed my attention. My mom was very political and always talking about it. And but, you know, I mean, Bill Clinton came along and everybody loved Bill Clinton at the time, you know, and I just didn't think about it because.
Oh, no, me neither.
Yeah.
I was all on board with that.
Just real everybody was comfortable. So when I was comfortable and young, I just didn't pay attention at all to politics. But what I was paying attention to, you know, even during the Reagan years, and I've said this before on my show, but it's like, you know, we had all these television shows with messages. Like, for instance, there was the episode of Family Ties when they got a gun. And, you know, they almost shot Alex in the middle of the night when he came home. You know, and the father freaked out and then they didn't want a gun. And at the end, they did a PSA. And then there was the episode of Different Strokes when the two little Drummond boys were not allowed into the white country club. And, you know, Mr. Drummond freaked out and there was a lesson there. Don't be a fucking racist. And there was always like these lessons in the shows that we watched. And, you know,
that, whether, that didn't seem controversial at all.
No.
You didn't have people marching in the streets saying, you know, oh, there should be more guns in TV shows and all this kind of stuff that you would probably see today.
Yeah, that's so true. Oh, my God. Yeah. Nobody cared. It was something that we all pretty much agreed on. It was a safe
argument. It seemed like
argument.
A baseline. And that's why I think I didn't think about it very much when I was growing up, because that it just seemed like the way the world mostly was. And those who weren't like that were, you know, far outliers.
Yeah, totally. It's so crazy that your mom and dad split when you were three. That's when my mom and dad split. So that's kind of
funny.
Yeah, interesting that we have
that
in common.
We'll have to compare notes on that.
That's so and you know, I mean, we didn't live parallel lives, obviously, but we were, you know, walking together close to each other for all these years, and it's just so interesting. It's always interesting to find out too that someone like you have this similar situation. We didn't know each other, and now we're finding out. Oh my God, look, we have this in common and that in common, and it's so. But yeah, but I feel like I, even though I am not directly affected because I'm full-blown menopausal, I'm not going to ever get pregnant. I don't have to worry about birth control. But this still affects me. There's the obvious shit with the economic stuff. You know, it's an economic issue and there's all that. And of course, there are people that I know that could be pregnant and those people would be affected. But how it affects me and you and every woman in this country is that when we go out and do our thing, the more rights that are taken away from us, the more those misogynistic men out there will feel like they can say and do anything they want to us and experience.
Oh, completely.
Nothing. Never, ever have to be held accountable. And in most cases,
exactly
they
right.
wouldn't. And it's scary.
These are all, you know, not to minimize it, but kind of grains of sand. And then you suddenly realize that there's a desert out there filled with all these little bits and pieces of white supremacy, misogyny, et cetera. And everything just kind of enables and paves the way for these other things until you're just drowning in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really quite upsetting. It's, you know, when I found out that, I'm trying to remember the timeline, it was Romney gave McConnell the green light to go ahead and put up Amy Coney Barrett for confirmation. And I lost my shit, and I'll never forget it because I had Fred Guttenberg on my show that day, and he lost he lost his daughter in one of those high school shows at Parkland. I can't remember. I think it was Parkland. And I will always feel guilty about that interview because I was so beside myself and I felt awkward talking. Like, I'm never very good with death and grief. It makes me feel awkward and I don't want to say the wrong thing. So I just feel awkward. And I did tell him that. But as soon as, you know, he hung up, I went on and did the rest of the show on my own and just cried because I was so terrified that I was going to lose my health insurance. And, but this is different because for me, I'm not in this panic mode because I'm not going to have, outside of what I just explained to you, you know, obviously I'm not going to have to worry about getting pregnant. And I'm able to kind of look, it's not to say that I'm not upset about this. It's just that I don't have the personal breakdown experience because I don't have the same kind of investment that a young person would. But at the same time, I feel like, and I hope I'm right about this, but it's like I said before, I hope that this serves us like as an opportunity to get a lot of new Democratic voters, even though I don't think the Democratic Party is perfect. It's like, oh my God, there's the Democrats who care. And then there's the Nazis. So, the Democrats fuck up from time to time, but I think in the overall picture, they do things for people that, you know, they write laws that will make us more equal and help us and give us opportunities where there weren't any before. But I feel like there's a part of me that actually feels hopeful about this. Do you share that?
Yes, I do. I have to stay focused on the potential good that may come out of a very shitty situation, you know? So I have to hope that when I see people marching, and, you know, there's a march coming up on the 14th, which is, I think, Saturday, in L.A., and I'm sure there are other ones going on around the country, and I'm planning on going to one of those, and I think that will help bolster that feeling of at least we can try and mobilize people enough to speak out and, you know, take some actions here. I was thinking yesterday about how, you know, we keep pointing out the hypocrisy and the disingenuousness of the arguments of conservatives and the GOP and catching them in their lies and pointing out all these things. Mm-hmm. But it's so difficult because the thing is, they don't care about that.
Right.
They're not burdened by any, you know, internal consistency of logic that that would make any normal person feel like they have to square that circle.
Right.
They just don't care. So while we're kind of out there feeling self-righteous and whatever about pointing out these things, these glaring inconsistencies and the flouting of ethics and all this kind of stuff, they're just kind of barreling along with their, you know, Christo-fascist, misogynistic, everything-phobic hatefulness.
Mm-hmm.
And all they do want to do is punish and disenfranchise people. And the question is going to be, how do you deal with people like that who don't honor those kind of fundamental moorings of ethics and morality and shame and decency that we always were taught made up the playing field, right?
Yeah.
These people are willing to go hell for leather in grabs for power and make a virtue out of immorality. And how do we deal with that without becoming like them?
Mm-hmm.
And when there's no, like, material recourse, when the systems to redress those things have been compromised or corrupted.
Yeah, and you know who, I'm going to try to find it now. I hope I can find it real quick. But there was that woman, I'm so bad with names, but she's a state, I think she's a state senator, and somebody called her a pedophile, and she went off.
Oh, Mallory McMorrow.
Thank you.
She's fantastic.
And that's it.
I listened to her on some other show yesterday, and she is amazing.
And she needs to be the template for every single Democrat.
Now, I have been thinking that, too, that, oh, God, I wish she could give classes, because that is the exact temperament, the tone of the response, the fervency with which she's doing it. It's just like, she's not going to take this bullshit. She's going to call it out for what it is and, you know, fuck these people.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, going back to what you were saying about we can't become them, because then the country dies. But the way to fight back, again, and her, like you said, her tone and everything, it's getting in their face and going, you're not going to fuck with us. We are going to win. It's an attitude.
We've got to stop pretending like things are normal anymore. They're not normal anymore.
No.
You know, they're not how they used to be. And we need to come up with a new guidebook on how to deal with this bizarre new reality we have.
Yeah, and I think part of it is literally, I mean, Eric Swalwell does a fantastic job with his tone. And I think that's what it really comes down to, because we don't want the Democrats to break laws. We don't want the Democrats to become exactly what they're fighting. So, and, you know, what is the answer? I think the answer is, how do you deal with the bully on the schoolyard? And part of that, because bullies on the schoolyard are really just fucking weaklings who, when they're stood up to, they back down. Now, I'm not saying that all the Republicans would just easily back down. But on the other hand,
but I think shining the light on them and being loud about standing up to them and just calling out what they're doing and publicizing the things they're saying helps because it gives puts them under more scrutiny.
Yes, and it's true also what you said, because, and I can be guilty of it, but understanding the idea that our quick letter, we've got it on them. They don't give a shit that we've got it on them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter
in
their
world. And I do that too. I mean, everyone loves finding a good good point of hypocrisy to point out.
Right. But that doesn't stop the voters.
And that makes them feel outraged and stuff, but they don't give a fuck.
No, they don't. And the leadership doesn't give a fuck, because they know their base doesn't care. And so they're just like, whatever. We're going to say whatever.
Well, whatever lies they want to invent. I mean, look at the QAnon shit.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Did you see that documentary?
Oh, I've been afraid to watch it, because I've read and listened to enough about all this crazy wacko bullshit, but Yeah, I probably should.
Well, I haven't seen the whole thing. There are so many fucking parts of this documentary. And, you know, I mean, basically, was it Ron Watkins? There's Ron Watkins, and I don't remember which one, who Ron is. I think Ron is Q. But I have to look him up.
Yes, Ron Watkins is Q.
Okay. So and then there's his weird father. And both of them. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're both lunatics.
Insane. They're fucking insane. And it's like, I do want to get back. I don't have to watch it all because I believe that they go into 1-6. And, you know, there's when they were making the documentary, 1-6 had already happened, or at least they hadn't wrapped it up. So they included it. And then I guess I have not seen the last show, which I just want to jump to the last show I have to watch. But it's very hard. It is hard to watch because you're just like, oh, my fucking God. I can't believe so many people are falling for this.
Yeah, it just makes you feel like I just want to go jump off a bridge.
Exactly.
Because humanity is doomed.
But I guess the last show, Ron kind of gives it away that he's Q.
What, that it's all a big put on?
Well, I think he's asked if he's Q. And evidently, I haven't seen it, but it's the way he responds with this kind of grin. That is like
he thinks he's being all secretive. Yeah. Look at me, I'm so clever.
Right. And no, he's not. And it's just, you know, it's like I was afraid to watch. Have you seen Get Me Roger Stone?
Yes.
I know. And I was afraid to watch that. There was a running joke with my boyfriend and I, that, you know, whenever we hear any weird noises outside, we're like, I'm convinced that it's Roger Stone climbing up the wall. He's going to kill us.
I love that. Oh, God. Talk about one of the most insufferable humans to ever draw breath. Jesus Christ.
He's so awful. He's so fucking
awful. So awful. I hate to bring it down to this level, but did you ever see the pictures of him and his wife in like the Swingers mag?
Oh my god,
my boyfriend Ronnie sent those to me one time.
Oh my god,
I hate you.
Now I totally want to see them.
Oh god, so go find those if you can, people, because
that's so gross.
Especially if you're trying to diet.
That is so gross. Well, you know, just I have to tell this really crazy funny story since you said that your boyfriend sent you pictures that you didn't want to see. Okay, so this is a completely...
Yeah, he doesn't send me pictures of himself. He sends me
Roger Stone.
The 80s of Roger Stone in his life.
Well, this story has nothing to do with that except for it triggered a memory. And it's just so funny. And it's just so weird. And I have to preface it because I had this friend and he's no longer with us. But he was married to... He was rich and he was married to Denise. And my mom and I were friends with him. Just loved them. He was an actor. And we were all actors, actually. And so we would go hang out with Rich and Denise all the time. They had a couple kids. And so it came to this point where they were going to leave. We were in California. We were living in Glendale. And they were going to go to, I think, New Jersey or something like that. They were going to move to New Jersey. And they were our best friends. And so, you know, we missed them and everything. So I was over there one day. And they were packing up. And Rich comes out. And he's holding this videotape. And he's like, honey, look what I found. And she looks at him, and it was a videotape called Blacks on Fire. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? I thought it was like a KKK video. And
that was the first thing that occurred to me. Like, some horrible racist.
Yeah, I'm like,
shit.
What do they have? And it turns out that it was a porno from the 70s.
Oh my God.
And it was fucking gross, but awesome. It was like really poorly, like no budget, budget. And the woman... She had the full bush, like, I mean, no shaving.
Lots of hair.
Lots of hair. There was lots of hair. I will give it to the guy. He was going down on her. So, hey, I'm going to give it to him.
Hey,
you know?
Good on him.
But it was so funny because it was like, you know, I'm like, I have to have this fucking video because they were going to throw it out. And I'm like, I must be the new owner of Blacks on Fire. And so, like, I went home and I watched it.
You are the inheritor of the legacy.
And
it is up to you now to pass it on to someone who is capable of caring for this treasure.
Well, unfortunately, I think I either gave it away or I lost it. I don't know. But I had a friend. She
you
came
wore
over.
It out, didn't you?
I must have. That's really the truth. You know, there's a hole in it right where I stop it every time. But... But it was so funny because she was like wearing a wig and it was just the full blown
70s. No one will ever know me in this thing if I wear this
if wig. If I wear the wig, no one will ever recognize me.
I'll never get fired from my secretarial job.
Oh my God. And so my girlfriend, she comes to stay with me and I told her I have this video and she's like, I have to see it. And I'm like, I can't watch it again. I swear to God, I can't watch it again. So I put it on for her and then I went in my bedroom and I could just hear her cackling out in the living room and just laughing. I don't have it anymore and I wish that I did. But I don't have a VCR, so I couldn't enjoy it anyway. But it was like a random story that I just remembered.
Days gone by, huh?
The name of that video, Blacks on Fire, just makes me laugh so hard.
That's the best.
They were just so hot. They were just so hot. Oh my God. Let's see. One quick question about politics and then we're going to have a little bit of fun. But I had this thought and I just want to see if you agree or how you feel about this. I know there's like the two camps with Merrick Garland and DOJ going after Trump. My take on it is after listening to everybody, after just watching this country behave and all of it, I think I know that the DOJ doesn't give a shit what I think. They're not going to do anything based on what I think. But they're not going to do things for partisan reasons, or at least they shouldn't. But all that aside, I would much prefer, like my personal preference is, I hear a lot of people, and I know Sherry Jacobus is one person who is very, very adamant about the fact that Trump needs to be indicted before the midterms because she is coming from that world. Well, I voted for, you know, I was a Republican, now I'm an independent, and I voted for Biden because I want to see, you know, justice. And if we don't get justice in a certain time period, people aren't going to show up to vote. And I'm kind of concerned. I don't want to put that out there. I don't want that message, we're not going to vote, to be out there. I would, you know, I want Trump indicted too. And if he goes his whole life never getting indicted, that will absolutely be wrong. I care more about democracy though than I do about what happens to him. And so, but I'm thinking, like, I would like to see some of the higher ups get indicted maybe before the midterms, if that's going to happen.
Just to kind of show that it's creeping toward actual action.
Yeah, to give confidence.
Yes. Right. I mean, I think that would be a great solution. I mean, obviously, I don't think any of what they're doing should be considering strategy for the elections. I think they need to go where the evidence leads and whatnot. But if it worked out that way, I think that would be tremendous, because at least it would show kind of like, okay, things are happening in good faith. We can trust what's happening, even if it's slower than we would like, and something is, the wheels are turning on, basically.
Yeah, and I also kind of think if Trump were to be indicted before the elections, I would fear that that might energize their base even more. I mean, I know they're already energized. And I don't know.
I think that's probably the case.
Because of the martyr thing. He'd be a martyr.
It's a tightrope to walk, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think that his base might see him as a martyr. And, you know, again, I don't know how many new people they'd be bringing in. Like, if Trump were to get indicted, how many new people would say, oh, I'm going to vote now? Like, I mean, I know they're pretty much all primed to vote. But I think that, you know, there is this growing white supremacist movement that Trump is, you know, a huge part of. And I could see where, you know, I mean, it's like you think in terms of just people talking to each other, and you've got the Proud Boys and you've got all these young white conservative, I don't even want to call them conservative, but just like, you know, extremist type right wingers who love their patriarchal power. And maybe they're not paying that much attention, but when they see that, you know, a white man who is propping up white supremacy gets in trouble, now we all have to fight for him.
Around.
Yeah. And so that's one of my concerns. It's like, you know, and that's like everything. The only thing that I disagree with Sherry on this is talking about how Democrats won't show up. I just don't want to put that out there, because I think we get into manifest destiny, and I don't want to do it. And I totally agree with her that Trump should be indicted. I'm not against that, but I just...
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. And what was I just going to say now? Oh, and also because, you know, the Trumpists are basically all built around trying to be victims in any given scenario.
Yes, exactly.
That grievance mentality that if Trump does get indicted, you know, it's just going to feed into that, and they're just going to whip up a frenzy into, oh, poor beleaguered, you know, white conservatives, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going
to
use it.
I mean, they're looking to be the victims in Roe being overturned.
I know.
I mean, that kind of contortionism is just incredible.
It is. And, you know, I wish people, you know, I mean, again, now this goes back to what you were saying as far as they don't have shame and they don't care when they're called out on their hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing we say, no higher, like having a moral high ground, like in a literal sense, matters. It just doesn't matter.
No,
because they're not playing.
They're not, they don't have the same baseline of morality and ethics as normal humans. I mean, look at Madison Cawthorn, for God's sake.
I know. What a fucking idiot.
He's fucking pumping away. And, you know, back in the day, I'm old enough to remember when people resigned for a lot less.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, but he's just out there like, well, admittedly, you know, I don't think Republicans like him either. But,
right.
It just goes to show where how much the needle has moved away from what is generally publicly acceptable.
It's just all so scary. So the last political question I will ask you is, how are you feeling? What is your gut feeling? I know you're not a psychic, but what is your gut feeling on, you know, what's going to happen in November?
Oh, I hope to fuck everyone gets out and votes. If this doesn't get our asses moving,
nothing will.
And organize, I don't know what on earth will.
Yeah, I don't either. I really don't.
I plan on, you know, shouting from the rooftops to get people to vote, but it, for me and my circle, it's kind of preaching to the converted.
Right.
So I don't know how much I can influence people that way, other than just get out there.
Well, I also.
Sorry.
And I was just going to say, I always like to say, look, as individuals, we can phone bank for candidates. And I'm always going to say the pro-choice, but, you know, we can phone bank for candidates. We can donate to candidates and we can register people to vote. I also want to throw this out there. I think I have a patrons only show and I recorded that earlier and I don't remember if I shared this, but I think I did. Liz Winstead is going to do on July 17th. I love her. She's been on the show too, but she's going to do like a, I don't know what you would call it, but an education for everybody. It's an online thing on July 17th, which happens to be my birthday. And she's, so it's my birthday present. She's going to tell everybody, here's how we fight. She's going to give us the tools we need. She spends her life, you know, defending abortion clinics and abortion doctors and doing everything she can for women and for people who are pregnant. So she's going to have a lot of good news. And this is a, like, for people who don't necessarily want to go marching. And I, you know, like, I know this is going to, if it's going to be struck down, it's going to be in July. And I live in D.C. And oh my God, the fucking drive into D.C. on the metro makes me nervous because of COVID, even though I'm fully vaxxed and everything. I know my mom would want to go, and I for sure talked about this on the Patrons Only show, but it's like she passes out when it's too hot. I'm not taking her down to the fucking march and
in July
with COVID, and she's 75. Yeah. No, I'm not doing it. So some people can't march. If you can't march, it doesn't mean you can't do anything. There are so many things we could do. Yes, social media is important and we can share, but you know, you could phone bank and the great thing about phone banking is it's not the most fun thing to do, but it's really easy. You just like whoever you like, whichever candidate you're interested in, they've always got the whole setup. You could do it usually through your computer where you don't have to even use your phone, or you use some number thing that they give you, and they give you the whole, you know, dialogue that, you know, and always just remember to be polite, even if they're assholes to you, be polite.
Yeah, you just have to remember you're a representative of that candidate and the party in general.
Yeah, so you don't want to piss people off. So yeah,
no.
Those things are all doable. And if all of us would just dedicate maybe an extra, you know, whether it's an hour or if you say, oh, I'm going to get my friends together and we're going to go register voters, you know, one day of your life, something you've mm-hmm. never done before. If you include mm-hmm. that this year, that'll make all the difference. It will really help. So I'm just always encouraging
people. And I would add also, this is the first time I've volunteered to be a poll worker.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because people are so scared, mm-hmm. you know, given what they've seen, all the abuse that poll workers take, God only knows what it's going to look like going forward. And I just thought, you know, that's something I can do mm-hmm. and something I will be able to cope with.
Yeah. Bring your phone.
Yeah, because if you can't even have the voting process, if you don't have enough people out there because they're too intimidated to vote, that's going to be huge too. So basically anything you can do, and whatever your skill set is mm-hmm. or whatever your avoidance topics you know, if you don't like to talk to people or whatever, there's something out there for you to do.
Yes. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful you're going to be a poll worker. That just like warms the cockles of my heart.
I just have to remember, no political t-shirts or anything. Yeah. I'm neutral. I'm just there to facilitate stuff getting done.
All right. So let's now switch over to the fun part of the show. I mean, we had some fun, but for the extra fun part, for those of you who don't know, I'm going to be asking Julie the questions from the Bernard Pivot questionnaire that was always at the end of Inside the Actor Studio. And the goal here is to just answer these questions with the first thing that comes in your mind. Don't think too hard. And here we go. And I have a feeling I'm going to know the answer to this question, but maybe you'll surprise me. What is your favorite word?
Unique.
Okay. See, I thought you were going to say something else. I'll tell you at the end.
I was going to say fuck?
Yes, because so many people do.
I'm trying to be unique, okay?
There you go. Okay, unique. What's your least favorite word?
Moist. That's got to be everybody's worst word, right? I mean, it's such a god-awful
word. What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Reading, I would say.
What turns you off?
God, Republicans.
Okay, here it is. What's your favorite curse word?
Oh, fuck, of course. Yeah, just like everybody else. Although I have to say, if I have to hone it down, motherfucker.
Motherfucker. Yeah, I like motherfucker. What sound or noise do you love?
My cat's purring.
Oh, you're cute little kitties. What sound or noise do you hate?
People screaming.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt? Which I don't even know what your own profession is, but what would you like to attempt outside of it?
Is retiree a profession? Because I can't wait to try that out.
I am totally there with you.
Or a lottery winner, let's just say
there
that.
There you go. What profession would you not like to do?
Oh, God. Probably being a teacher. I don't, because I don't have what it takes for that. And it's such a profession. Those people do such amazing work. Yeah. And I don't know how they do it with all the bullshit they have to deal with.
And plus, everybody's sick all the time.
Oh, yeah.
All the kids sick. Okay, so last question.
The worst thing about being a teacher is all the fucking kids.
I'm going to have to tell that to my boyfriend because we don't have kids and we always laugh about that. Okay, so last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
What the hell are you doing here?
Wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Oh, my God, that's so funny.
I think it's going to be a guess you lost that bet, huh?
So I don't know if you want to tell people this, if there's like a thing you're not telling people, but can I know what you do for a living?
I work in HR.
Gotcha, okay.
Now, that's all you need to know. And it's as exciting as it sounds. I actually love what I do, but
that's good.
You know, there are a lot of HR tropes that are out there, and
wow,
and service all the way.
Have you always worked in HR? Have you had a variety of different jobs?
For the majority of my working life, yes.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Wow. Well, it's just like, it's so fun talking to you. I mean, I could sit here and ask you all these questions for like another hour. And I know that people would like tune out because it's too much. But out of just my own curiosity, I'll have to get you either on the show or on the phone on my own just to ask you, because it's just endlessly fascinating to me that, you know, as much, there's so much wrong with the internet, but at the same time, there is this beautiful part of the internet that people can be connected and like friendships can form. And, you know, like with Leanne, she is this beautiful, wonderful human being. And I genuinely feel touched by her presence, even though I mean, yes, I've met her. I can't even officially say I've met her. I don't even think we've ever met. We just saw each other. And, you know, in high school, passed each other in the halls. And, you know, and the reason I asked you in the beginning, it was, what did you think of me? It almost sounds like with your answer, that I was searching for, or like fishing for compliments, which I was not, because I just figured people thought I was fucking weird. And, you know, the way
I know I was fucking weird. I got to say, you know, having it revealed in the past few years how many of our classmates from school have turned into
Trump supporters,
hardcore Trumpers,
or
just
really
general
sad.
Right-wingers. It's been extremely disappointing.
Yes, it has.
And really colored the way I see people that I knew way back when. But on the other hand, it's like you say, the internet can be a wonderful thing, and it has reconnected, or connected for the first time, people that we went to school with who have not turned out like that, like Leanne, like Diana, like Leslie.
Do you know Martha Kelly?
Oh, I love Martha.
Oh my God, she's on everything.
Her sister Joan.
Yes. Oh, I used to sit next to Martha. I never hung out with her, but I sat next to her, and she's so fucking funny. And now she's like, for those of you who don't know, she's a stand-up comedian, not surprising. And she was on a show with Zach Galifianakis. I can't remember the name, but now she's in fucking everything. What was it called?
Baskets.
Okay.
It's a wonderful show, and she's so good in it.
Oh, she's so good.
And I have to
everything.
Say, Martha and Joan's dad was the principal of my grade school.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's
so
cool.
I've known them for a long time, and then we went to middle school together as well.
Wow, and Martha is just so fucking deadpan. To me, she's almost like Zach Galifianakis, but a woman. And
she's like the
woman version.
They're a really good fit that way.
Yeah, and I know that she's on Euphoria. She's like the drug, I don't know if you watch Euphoria, but like the kingpin, the drug kingpin. She's like the queen pin. And then I know she was in that movie about divorce, and I can't remember. It was the guy from Star Wars, you know, the tall. I'm so bad with fucking names. What is his name? He's
the tall guy from Star Wars.
Chewbacca? No, you know, he's younger. He's the new generation. He was also in the show. He was also in the show Girls. Did you ever watch Girls? Adam Driver.
You know, I never have. That I would want to see.
You know what? I really liked Girls. I really liked that show, and I did not want to watch it. I just didn't like Lena Dunham. And my boyfriend was like, I think you're going to like this show, and I fucking love the show. I really loved it. But yeah, Adam Driver, and it was a movie about divorce, and Martha Kelly played I think she was like a marriage counselor or something. And then I just recently saw her in Grace and Frankie. And
oh my God, yeah, I had no idea she was doing so much work.
She's doing a lot. And then there was
Baskets religiously.
Yeah, there was something else that I saw. I keep like going, oh, there's Martha Kelly again. There's Martha Kelly again. And it was like, wow. And I got to give it to her because she's 54 years old. I'm almost 54. But, you know, she graduated with us. And obviously she has built up a comedy career, which has gotten her into this place. But I was an actor for a long time. And, you know, and I left the business. I was basically an actor for a decade and I left. And while I got some work, I certainly didn't make it. But I just decided I didn't want to do it anymore. And then in part, too, just because of age. You know, I left when I was 30, 31.
Yeah.
And, you know, here Martha is in her 50s and she's really starting to get a lot of good work. And I'm so proud of her. And she's so funny.
Oh,
and I love her so much. And do you follow her on Twitter and her fucking cat?
Oh, of course.
Barry
of course.
And Gary. Oh, my God. I love her cats.
Yeah. No, Barry. I love Barry.
I know. I love Barry. So just go, Martha. That's so cool. And I love connecting with you on this show and on social media.
It's wonderful.
It's so much fun. So before I let you go, tell everybody where they can find you.
If you want to be exposed to some incoherent, sometimes rage-filled ramblings that are the equivalent of a verbal dripping of salsa on one's shirt, I am at Bella Fortunate on Twitter.
On Twitter.
And I'm on Facebook, too, but Twitter is probably better.
Okay, so just everybody, you got to follow her because she's really fucking funny. She has really smart takes. You'll enjoy her Twitter feed. I guarantee it. Of course, you can find me at Author Kimberly, K-I-M-B-E-R-L-E-Y. Don't forget the extra E at the end. My books are on Amazon. And also, I don't know if you know this, but I wrote a book called Peyton's Choice, and it's about teen abortion, and the whole fucking backdrop of my book is Torrance.
I love it.
So anyway, it was awesome talking to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
I'm probably going to ask you back on, so be ready.
Oh, God, please. This is so much fun and stress-free and whatever, and I just love it. I would be on any time you want to have me.
Awesome. All right, well, you have a great one.
Well, thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.